All right, welcome to the first Bird's Eye View. Today we're going to talk about quite a few things, mostly the Orioles.
Do we have to?
It's a rule.
Okay.
With a name like that, you have to do it.
We can't go with the Blue Jays?
No.
Okay.
All right, so today we're going to cover opening day and a few days after. We're going to do a little breakdown of the roster. We're going to talk about some Orioles predictions for the season, which should be interesting and or depressing. And then I think we're going to try to get out of here.
All right, well, let's start with our first segment, which was opening day review. All right, so starting with opening day, Jake, I know that you went with your wife and your father, and what general sentiments and feelings did you get by going to your opening day this year?
Well, I mean, I love opening day. It's the one day that you can go and
see Orioles fans.
Yeah, everything's orange and new again. But the first thing that I noticed was really the park itself. You know, this being the big 20th anniversary and all that kind of good stuff. You know, the Orioles had some new features there. I tried to take as many pictures as possible because I'm a big dork.
But we'll get those updated to the blog in the upcoming few days.
Absolutely. Now, the first thing I wanted to see was the new rooftop bar.
Is that because you're a drunk?
Yeah, that is exactly
why. Do you want to pay $8 a pop?
Well, I was about to watch an Oriole game.
Okay. Well, if you want to flush your money down the drain, I understand.
I have to be honest, moving into this whole opening day, I thought the rooftop bar was the worst idea ever. I thought it was a poor use of space. I thought it was unnecessary.
And against the whole dynamic of what Camden Yards is really all about.
Exactly, exactly. Especially putting it on top of the batter's eye. But I have to admit that I was wrong. It's nicely situated up there, and it's a really cool space.
Yeah.
Not only can you... you know, sit at a bar and watch the ball game, but you have good sight lines to the field, to Utah Street, and to the newly renovated picnic area.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a really unique area. It's a nice wide open area. My prediction is by the time we are seeing the Kansas City Royals and there's 100 people in the stands, those 100 people will be sitting in the center field bar area, and there won't be a single person sitting in any of the other seats.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, it's a great area, great location, great use of the facility. It'll be interesting to see how popular that site gets, but I have a funny feeling that those front seats in front of that section there, where you can basically just look right in the field, are going to be one of the first seats that get filled up as soon as that ballpark opens up every single time. And that's pretty much been the case for the past few games when the Orioles have been playing the Twins and the Yankees. Any other impressions of the stadium?
Well, not really. I mean, the other major renovation was the flag court. Did you get a good look at the flag court?
I did take a look at the flag court. Unfortunately, I have to take a look at it as a negative viewpoint. They did remove a part of the scoreboard and lowered the scoreboard, and they put the wire fencing in there and allowed people to come up there and actually see above it. Fortunately, I kind of liked that tall fencing because I was the only one that could see over it. So I could generally push away the 12-year-old kid and say, you know, you really are sitting in my way. I'll come up here and be able to see the game while, you know, you don't have to be here. But now, that looks like the prime spot for people just to dawdle. And there's actually a bar location over there as well now where you can grab drafts. So we'll see if that trend continues. But it looks like the Orioles are trying to get their money back as well with $8 Natty Bows.
You know, I didn't realize how much lower the fence was going to be, but especially with the wire fence, it does look a lot lower.
What do you think, like 4 or 5 feet?
Yeah, thereabouts.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure if that's going to be a detriment as far as on-the-field performance is going to be. You know,
well, Showalter said that they really wanted to do it because they had so many issues with the balls hitting against that scoreboard and whether it was a home run or not. They said if it hits that fence, it's going to make a clear clanging noise, so it's going to give the umpires a better definition of whether it was a home run or whether it was, you know, hitting off the scoreboard, which does make sense, or it could just be sugarcoating.
There is always that. The only other thing I'll say about the park is that it's nice to see an infusion of orange again. It seemed like the team really went to war on the color orange during the 90s, and in the aughts, you know, they brought it back. And, you know, when you look out there in the picnic area and you got all those, you know, gaudy orange umbrellas, they've really done a good job of, you know, bringing the primary color back. And originally I thought against the green of Camden Yards and, you know, the great traditional look that it would be, you know, kind of garish. But I like it, being able to look out there and see orange.
It's nice. The only other big change that I'm kind of looking forward to seeing this season is what happens with the statues out in center field. We'll probably save that for a later date when Weaver goes in and we'll make some comments. But I we'll get to that topic later in the season, but I do kind of, I'm interested to see what the Orioles do with it, and I want to see how much and how similar it is to the Brooks statue that's outside by Pickles. But overall, some interesting changes to Camden Yards. You know, I think the stadium definitely saw an improvement with the changes. We'll see how well they do for the rest of the season.
Yeah, definitely agree.
Any other comments for opening day, just in terms of just general festivities and stuff like that, besides orange and stadium improvements?
Well, I mean, I always like getting there, you know, early on opening day.
Right.
I try to make sure that I'm there by the national anthem on every game, and usually we're running too late for that. But we got in nice and early, you know, for the whole orange carpet business.
You're pretty adamant to your wife saying you had to be there.
Yes, she didn't have a choice. But I will say that being there for the festivities was worth it just to hear them boo Kevin Gregg.
It was very nice.
It was nice. Player introductions are always best when Kevin Gregg gets booed.
Yep.
You know, it's funny because when that happened, my first thought was...
Do you think that missed up the goggles?
Yeah, you got a little misty eye. Yeah. My first thought was, you know, if this game goes poorly, how quickly is this crowd going to turn on the Birds?
They might want Mike Gonzalez back.
That's right. It seems like they had the pitchforks and torches already ready. No, but that was about it. I mean, that takes us into the game itself. I mean, you want to talk a little bit about what you saw at the game?
Well, I'm going to go back to the pregame festivities. You know, like, I kind of agree with you. I like to get there nice and early. So we had gotten down there about 3 or 4 hours before game time. And we decided to go and, you know, take a general poll of, you know, what the fans of Baltimore really thought. So really to get a good feel for, you know, what Baltimore thought, we thought to ourselves, well, let's go up to Lexington Market and get a feel for what the locals have to say. So we went in, got crab cakes, sat down with a guy named Tim. And we talked from everything about never buying a beer inside the stadium because they're $8 a pop to the Orioles are the Orioles and they ain't no Ravens. And I can't really argue with them, but I did ask him a few questions. I asked him, I said, how many wins are you expecting the Orioles to have this year? And he said, 63. I said, okay. I said, who do you think your MVP is going to be? And he said, there's not going to be an MVP. And I said, when do you think the Orioles have a possible chance of going into playoffs? And he said, maybe when my son goes into college. And I asked, well, how old is your son? And he said, he was just born last year. So, not a very good chance for that to happen, in his opinion. But we did go to a few other places. We went down to Camden Pub, talked to a few people there. The mood there was a little bit more upbeat, probably because of the drinks that were flowing.
The Camden Pub locals tend not to be the smartest either.
No, they're not the smartest, and especially since the people wanted to play by the Spotapots, basically. playing cornhole by Spotapots is probably a bad tendency, but the people there were a lot more upbeat. You know, they were talking 500. And then we got to the ball game, and I met up with the most ultimate Orioles fan I've ever met. There was an individual that was sitting about two rows in front of us. He was basically yelling and screaming that the Orioles were going to win the American League East. We were going to win 100 games. And the individual was wearing a customized Craig Tatum jersey.
Wow.
So he was a true fan. Now, he was very intoxicated as well. But
Are we sure this wasn't actually
Craig Tatum? It might have been Craig Tatum, actually. Yeah. If it was Jake Fox, I could believe that. But Craig Tatum, I'm not so sure. But it was a good time. We had a good time with the festivities. I really enjoyed seeing some of the older players. I enjoyed Sutcliffe coming out for the opening pitch. I enjoyed Hoyles coming out for the opening pitch. And I really enjoyed that Brady got a good introduction as well and a good recognition from the fans of, we appreciate all the work that you're doing with the club.
Absolutely.
And Border got a good, pretty good representation, too, when they were announcing the announcers as well.
You know, on the subject of announcers, I thought it was interesting that they brought back David McGowan, the PA announcer, who's retired or passing the torch, if you will, to kind of do a handoff. I thought that was a nice touch.
I agree. I think that was a nice touch. I think that the Orioles always do a very good job with, you know, recognizing previous personnel. That being said, the new PA announcer. I'm going to have to wait and see a few more games. I was not that impressed. I realize that he's got quite a resume with, you know, working for Major League Baseball, but...
Hey, he can watch a lot of games.
He can. Watch a lot of games, and that's like about it, I guess. But we'll see how the season progresses. But overall, the festivities were really nice. Opening day was what you expect opening day to be. A lot of raucous, enthusiastic fans. And overall, the Orioles did a very good job with getting everything together. And that little kid that was the 10th man as well was great. So,
yeah. Opening day is kind of that double-edged sword because it's really great. Everybody's into it. But it's also kind of depressing because you look around and everybody's decked out in their O's gear. And you think to yourself, my God, if this team could just win, it would be like this on a Tuesday night in August.
Right.
Against the Royals.
And you know 3 days later that the Yankees are coming into town and you're not going to see this anymore.
Right.
But yeah. Opening day was really a good time had by all. Do we want to talk about game now, or do we want to...
I think we can talk the game.
All right, well, let's talk the game. Jake Arrieta.
Yeah, obviously the story...
And that's
of
all
the day.
It is. It's Jake Arrieta. I mean, you bring him in, and, you know, we lost Guthrie this offseason. You bring him in and say, you know, good luck, you're going to try to be the number one starter, and he came out and just absolutely dominated. He was aggressive. First few innings I had in my notes that, you know, he did have a higher pitch count. He, you know, danced around 3-1 counts, but he did settle down once he got into the third and fourth inning. And honestly, for a pitcher that, you know, had injury problems last year and then is all of a sudden thrust into the number one spot, I can kind of understand the higher pitch count the first few innings. But, you know, by the end of it, he was doing really well. Great movement on his pitches. Really looking forward to see if that trend can continue through the rest of the season, but really nice performance.
Absolutely. I mean, his curveball was great.
Yes.
And breaking ball was an excellent pitch for him. You know, and he's taken on that number one starter mantle about as well as you can, not in an arrogant way, but just saying, hey, you know, I'm the guy that happened to be selected to go that first day, so I'm going to do my best to take on what comes along with that. And, you know, at just 26, I mean, he seems interested in being a leader. And there's nothing better that you can do to have a performance like he did.
Yeah, he just wants to be aggressive and prove himself. And I know that's cliche, but that's something that the Orioles need right now, is someone to basically say, I want to be a Baltimore Oriole and I want to go out there and try to win.
Sure. I thought the other obvious story of the day was Nick Markakis, you know, hitting out a home run, proving basically that beyond a shadow of a doubt that, you know, that abdominal tear is not going to limit him, at least offensively. We'll get to the defensive piece in a little bit, but it was really good to see Markakis make a strong statement in the opening game, both because of the health concerns and also because, you know, his offensive production has been tailing off the last couple of years.
Yeah, the only thing I'll say from the offensive side for Markakis and, you know, some of the injuries is, you know, watching him run and stuff like that, and, you know, I'm a little concerned about, you know, how well he does on the base pass. Yeah, the power looks like it's there. Will the power last into May? We don't know.
Sure.
But the running concerns me. He looks a little awkward and more awkward than Markakis normally looks. So we're just going to have to keep an eye on him from an offensive side. The defensive side, like I said, we'll cover it at a later date.
Sure.
But overall, it was a great game. Really solid lead pitching besides, you know, the blown shutout in the ninth inning. But that's okay. Johnson was able to come in and salvage the victory for the Orioles. And that's what you really want to see, is a defined closure. They can come in there and save your game, as opposed to, Kevin Gregg.
Or Mike Gonzalez.
Or Mike Gonzalez.
Or
et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly. Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty much the story on opening day.
Yeah.
The rest of this game, the games this week, has been, well, until the Yankee series, at least, pitching.
Yep.
And we talked a little bit about Nick Markakis and defensively, and one of the things that you had noticed was actually his throws. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, Nick is, you know, Gold Glove winner, and he's always been really, you know, done a great job with, you know, hitting cutoff men and also getting the ball at least on one bounce into Weeters. There's been a few times in the past few games where, you know, he'll throw it in there, and it'll come in two bounces, and, you know, I'm not sure if it's just rust and he's getting the feel for it back. It's been colder as well, but it also could just be the aspect of he doesn't have that strength to get it all the way in from right field into home plate. It's one of those things we're just going to have to keep watching. Again, it's April. It's baseball. It's a long season.
Sure. He had an abbreviated spring training.
He had an abbreviated spring training, exactly. But again, it's one of those things of, you know, these things take time, and it's just something that Orioles fans are going to have to watch out for and say, he's acting a little strange. And I'm sure the American League is going to be watching him as well, because it's always been, I'm not going to run a Nick Markakis because it's an instant out.
Sure.
People might start saying, let's test him and see what happens, because he might not have that ability anymore.
I think the other key note, at least that I took from the first couple games, was really the lineup and to see what stability we're going to have there. Particularly with the breakdown of the designated hitter, and we'll talk about that when we hit the lineup, but also who's going to lead off for this team, and basically that comes down to who's playing left field on that given day. I'll be really interested to see as the weeks unfold, you know, if there's any movement in the lineup, or whether, you know, Buck Showalter is going to give it the time it needs to kind of mature and play out over the first couple seasons.
Yeah, I mean, this Reimold-Chavez discussion and who is going to be the left fielder has to be settled eventually. Hopefully sooner rather than later. I really do think Reimold deserves a shot, but at the same time, if he's going to be your leadoff hitter, he needs to be drawing walks and he needs to be getting singles.
Yeah, I mean,
you don't need to be hitting doubles, but just get on base. And if you're not getting on base,
one thing
that's not Moneyball
that jumped out to me, I think it was opening day, was that how few pitches Reimold took.
Yeah.
And then in the number two hole, how many pitches in comparison Hardy took.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're going to be a leadoff hitter, in that first inning, you have to look at pitches.
Yeah. I would agree. And, you know, even that's the key. I was thinking, too, when Markakis hit that home run and Jones came up right afterwards, Jones was first pitch swing, and I thought to myself, you know, it would have been really nice if Jones would have came up and just took a few pitches and looked at it. Instead, it was kind of impulsive. But again, he's the cleanup hitter now.
Someone's got to do it,
I guess, and take that swing. But at the same time, I'm looking at it, I'm just saying, take the pitches. Let the people out behind you get a little bit better feel for their number one pitcher.
That's right. All right, well, is that a good segue to actually talk about the lineups?
Yeah, let's talk about the lineups, because I'm sure we have a lot to say.
All right, so this takes us to a breakdown of the 25-man roster. Let's actually start with the rotation.
Okay.
And just give me your impressions of our top five.
Our top five, it pretty much has no experience. I mean, it's as simple as that. It's better than it was last year, where we have no clue how we're going to get through this season. But it's really, we have no clue. We could get to June and it could be a totally different rotation. Arrieta could get injured again. Tommy Hunter, I mean, I came into the season, I still think that Tommy Hunter's not going to be on this team at the end of the season. I think he'll either get traded or, you know, he's going to get released. And then we have got Jason Hamels, who had a great Sunday, but we'll have to see if that continues. And then we have Brian Mattis, so we'll just see if he can keep above or below a 10 ERA. And then Wei and Chen, we're going to have to see how the scouting reports. I mean, the first few games he might be great, but once the scouts start getting him, and if he's not able to adapt, we could have another Brad Bergeson on our hands.
That's right. I mean, I think if you take a look at the five-man rotation, you've got Arrieta, obviously, number one.
Yeah.
By default. You know, he may develop into quite a pitcher, but I don't think that he's got the instant pedigree of a number one that you
think. No, he could be a fighter. I mean, I definitely think he could be like a number three or a number four on most teams, but he's not a number one starter for most teams. I don't think there is a number one starter. I think the only person that's a number one starter right now in the whole Orioles organization is a Dylan Bundy.
Right.
And we're going to be waiting for a long time for that to happen.
That's right. Now, I mean, number two, Tommy Hunter, it will give you innings, but the question really becomes how quality those innings can be.
I mean, it's not just that, but it's health.
That's true. He threw those, what was it, seven or eight shutout innings.
Yeah.
You know, in the second game, but I'll tell you what, he was in the strike zone, he was pounding the strike zone, but he was missing bats by accident.
Yeah.
You know, he was not pounding low and away. You know, they were just not hitting him. It could have been just the fact that it was the Twins, you know, who had the worst record in the American League last year. But you know, he may give us 180 plus innings, but I worry about the quality of those innings.
Yeah.
You know, and then you go right down the line. Hamill, you know, is a real wild card. Everyone keeps saying, as far as, you know, the manager and the people who are paid to give him lip service, that he really had a light come on at the end of last year. But, you know, that's easy to say, and you've really got to see it.
I mean, he's also transitioning from the National League to the American League, which is a huge transition, and he's going to have to learn all these batters that he's really hasn't faced before. And, you know, again, it comes back to, once the scouting reports start to come out on him, it's going to be a question of, can he adapt?
Sure.
That first game, amazing. But now it's all about, what are you doing in May and June?
Sure. And I think the key with him so far is just the development of that two-seamer with that sinking action that he's been working out, which apparently wasn't a weapon for him in Colorado.
Yeah.
At four, you have Brian Madison. You know, Lord knows where he's going to be. He got shellacked by the Yankees in his first start, and the thing is that I really feel like if he doesn't get it together this year, I mean, we may be looking at Hayden Penn 2.0. I think that this might
well,
be
I mean,
it for him.
The thing with, he is young. I mean, let's go back and say, he is young. My bigger concern is, Brian Mattis was the one that was promised to us of, this is going to be a part of your future rotation.
Yeah.
Along with him, Zach Britton, Brian Mattis, and Jake Arrieta. You know, we're going to draft somebody else, like a Dylan Bundy, and those are going to be, you know, your huge, great starting rotation that we're going to basically go out and sign the cash cow for. If Brian Mattis isn't that, then you basically have just put yourself back another 2 to 3 years and waiting again. I'm not saying that the Orioles can't go out and sign someone. Well, actually, yes, I am saying that the Orioles can't go out and sign somebody.
Of quality.
Of quality, yes. You know, I think Kevin Millward's still available.
That's right. Where's Adam Eaton?
Yes. But that's the most frustrating aspect for me is, you know, if he doesn't work out or even doesn't show any promise, then we have the aspect of Orioles baseball is going to continue to wait and wait and wait for our saviors to come.
Sure. And then number five, Chen, you know, I think it was a great signing, you know, kind of one of those opportunities to catch lightning in a bottle type of thing. I think that clearly, you know, he's faced hitters at the highest levels of the leagues that he was in before, so he can probably be pretty successful in the major leagues. It's just a matter of, like you said, when the book is out on him, what adjustments does he make? I don't think that he's going to have an issue adjusting to the game, you know, the number of days that he pitches in a week, the ball. I think really it is a matter of, once he establishes himself and the hitters adjust, what is he going to do in reaction?
And see, I'm a little bit more pessimistic on a foreign player like him. You know, I understand the hoopla about foreign players, but we really haven't had a really good track record with foreign players. I mean, not talking about the Orioles, but Major League Baseball hasn't had a great record with, you know, foreign-based players. Look at Dice K for the Red Sox. Dice K was heralded as, you know, this great starting pitcher, and, you know, he's got nothing now. I mean,
sure,
he's there on the Red Sox, but it's not as a number one or number two starter. We gave him $8 million for 2 years. I mean, it's $4 million. I really wish the Orioles would have just said, you know what, let's spend the $10 million and go after a decent pitcher like a Roy Oswalt. Would he have come here? Maybe not.
Well, I think that's the issue.
And that's a possibility.
Apparently, you know, terrible in the AL East doesn't translate into Mandarin, which is, you know, really what helped us.
Well, it's all about coaching. He's just going over there and telling them.
He's the ambassador.
Exactly.
All right, so that's our top five, and then as far as, you know, kind of the next few options that we had there at the end, it seemed like, you know, Dan Duquette went out and got as much pitching as he could and then worked as hard as he could to release them all at
yes.
the end. Dana Evelyn, obviously, Alfredo Simone, a mystifying designation in my release in my eyes. But obviously, you know, the next few guys up are going to be Chris Tillman.
I don't know about that. Did you see his minor league report?
Well, isn't that the story?
Yeah. Well, no, his minor league thing was, you know, he pitched four innings and, what was it, two or three earned runs in AAA. So that doesn't bode very well for him coming up.
Also down there we have Brad Bergeson and
yep.
Jason Birkin. But really,
we've seen them before come up in the starting rotation, and the American League East is very familiar with them, and unless they develop a new pitch, they're going to get hammered. And it's hard for them to develop a new pitch in AAA.
That's right. All right, well, that's our rotation.
You have Zach Britton, of course, on the disabled list. But who knows what his health situation is right now. He had that experimental surgery where they injected stuff into him, hopefully to help regrow. But honestly, I think he's done pretty much done for the season. If he pitches more than 50 innings, I'll be shocked. Yeah. I'll be absolutely shocked.
Doesn't look good.
I don't see him coming back this season, but maybe I'll be proven wrong. You know, we're still waiting for the miraculous return of Brian Roberts.
And also on the DL is Tsuyoshi Wada.
Yes. I mean, another $4 million down the hole. That's all I can say. We should move on to talking about relief pitchers next.
Sure. Let's start with the cream of the crop, which would be Jim Johnson, officially named the closer.
Officially named the closer. About time.
That's right. I think clearly our most dependable arm in the bullpen.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad that on the offseason they decided that they were going to keep him as a relief pitcher as opposed to a starting pitcher. You know, that's probably one of the better moves that both Showalter and Duquette both made, of just saying, you know what, we know where he's good, let's keep him there.
Sure. Also back there towards late innings would be Matt Lindstrom, one half of the Jeremy Guthrie trade. You know,
one of the worst off-season trades, apparently.
You know, he's got a power arm. You know, apparently he can be a good setup guy. I don't think there's anything particularly wrong with him other than the fact that I hated the trade.
No, there's nothing wrong with it, and I hate the trade, but I understand the trade from a baseball side because they did do it to get options on these guys. And we all knew that Jeremy Guthrie was not going to stick around in Baltimore. But at the same time, for as many times as the Orioles had basically squandered a lead for Jeremy Guthrie or never given him insurance runs, I really was hoping that, you know, we could at least give Jeremy Guthrie a little bit. But good luck to the Rockies. You know, Jeremy Guthrie there with Jamie Moyer, and that's some rotation. That's all I can say.
That is a possibility of a lot of losses.
Yes.
Also, another power arm back there is Pedro Strop.
Yeah.
Who, you know, his fastball command has not impressed me, but boy, that arm does. You know, if he can hone in that fastball, he can be really effective back there.
He's got a lot of potential. He's really raw, and I think he's going to get eaten up in the American League East. But he actually did pretty well last season, all things considering. So we'll have to see how he does and progresses. But yeah, he's got a nice little pitch count. He's got nice little pitches, good speed. I just don't know how his placement is.
Sure. Luis Ayala was a pickup that I was surprised by.
I was actually surprised the Yankees didn't keep him. I mean, I think we only signed him for like $1.2 million. And I just didn't really understand why the Yankees just didn't say, that's $1.2 million. You know, that stuff just fell out of our pockets today. Here you go. There's your $1.2 million. But, you know, they might have just brought up some minor league talent and said, you know, we're going to make these people our bullpen pitchers and we don't really need this guy anymore. But I remember facing him last year and thought, you know, pretty decent pitcher. Not too flashy, but decent pitcher. So I think it was a good signing. I think it actually was probably one of the best signings that we had during the offseason. Well, cheap and should do pretty well.
He's serviceable. You know, he has certainly been no Mike DeJean or Steve Kline back
right
there. Sure. Moving on through the rest of the bullpen, a guy I was surprised that made the team was Darren O'Day.
Yes.
Who, you know, we've gotten to take a look at with that wacky delivery at this point. I guess it's good to have a guy with a different look, but I don't really know what role he's going to have on the team. You know, it's interesting the way the bullpen...
His role is going to be not Kevin Gray.
That's true.
Okay? It's as simple as that.
The
it's
sixth
going to be
guy
like, all right, we need to pull someone. Who are we pulling? Well, we got Kevin Gray and Darren O'Day in the back there. Grab me O'Day.
It's funny because the way the bullpen is constructed, we don't have a real long man. And so I'm surprised that we have these, you know, specialty part players. You know, you got to bring up the Submariner with the team and... you know, again, he could be great, and I could be wrong, but I just don't see the wisdom.
Well, know. I guess your other option is, I mean, who do you put in his spot? Do you put Burke in his spot?
Well, I mean, I think that the guys that didn't make the club, Alfredo Simone, I thought was a reasonable solution for the bullpen, both because he has closing experience, because he has starting experience. You can stretch him out. He can be the long man in the pen. He's got a power arm.
But isn't Strop filling that position for you now?
Not with the innings. And not with the professional experience.
Yeah.
You know, some of the other guys that could have made it in my eye was Zach Phillips was incredibly effective in the in spring training and is left-handed. And obviously, if you're a lefty in the major leagues, you can find a job.
But he had options.
Yes, he did.
He had options. It's as simple as that. That's what Buck came out and said. He said, we had options. It's part of the game. And honestly, I think the whole reason Simone was released is, you know, Buck's a big proponent for gun control. So, you know, immediately he was gone.
Other guys that could have made the club, at least in my estimation, you know, there's been some rumbling about turning Tillman into a reliever if he can't be a reliable starter. There's also obviously the options of bringing Birkin back, who at times, though in limited fashion, could be a dependable reliever. And, you know, obviously the other long man option would be Brad Bergeson, who's just not good enough to crack the rotation.
Right.
Also, in the bullpen back there, we've got Troy Patton, who's made the club for the first time out of spring training, a lefty.
A remnant of the Miguel Tejada trade.
That's right, the last remaining piece.
Yep.
I think that he's probably, in addition to being that left-handed guy, is going to be the guy who's stretched out the most for long man opportunities. He's just not there yet in this early portion of the season. I don't know if Patton's going to stick.
I mean, who else are they going to bring? I mean, there are other left-handers, but you know, I think he's going to stick. I think, you know, they're just going to keep him around, and he's just going to keep gaining experience. I think anyone that gets pulled off, it's going to be O'Day. But I think Patton's going to stick around. Showalter has been adamant about going to him often. He showed some decent stuff in spring training. He's shown some decent stuff in these first few games as well. I wouldn't be surprised if he's going to be a prominent portion of the bullpen going through this season.
I hope I stand corrected. And the last piece is Kevin Gregg, who is a pitcher.
Is he?
By definition.
Okay, I guess we just haven't got that taste for him yet.
It is certainly acquired.
Yes. That. What else can you say about Kevin Gregg?
Nothing good, that's for
sure. Yes, besides boo. Boo, boo, boo.
Well, on that note, do you want to move on to position players?
Yeah, sure.
All right, well, let's take a look first at the catching position. First, Matt Wieters.
The switch-hitting Jesus.
That's right.
I mean, what can you say besides the switch-hitting Jesus? Gold Glove winner, you know, should see a massive increase in production on his offensive side. I'm expecting 30-plus home runs. Should just command the game. This should be a breakout season for him. He should be an all-star candidate easily this season.
And not because the Orioles have to have
one. No, I'm saying he should be a serious all-star candidate.
I agree. I mean, obviously, his hype when he came up was huge, and he might just grow into that. I mean, he's becoming fantastic behind the plate, and, you know, obviously, he's becoming much more comfortable to play from both sides. And
yes.
Is becoming more of an impact bat.
Right.
His backup is Ronnie Polino.
Who?
Once Teagarden went down, he was the other guy in camp.
You mean the guy that showed 3 weeks late?
That's the one.
Okay.
Yeah. Who put on, by the way, in his Oriole debut, a 4-for-4 performance, but not new to him because apparently his Mets debut, he was 5-for-5. So apparently if he can just show up for a new team every day, he'll be amazing.
Yeah, but why was he in the lineup that night? OBP.
That's right.
371 against lefties.
He does hit lefties.
Yeah.
He's here.
It was the Christmas gift for the Orioles this year. Everyone got copies of Moneyball, and they just said, all right, we're just going to follow this. This seems pretty cool. This seems revolutionary. Welcome to baseball 10 years ago, but
I think Paulino's here for a cup of coffee until
Teagarden. Yeah, I agree with you.
Working our way around the infield, we've got Chris Davis at first. I got to be honest with you, I'm not a real big believer in Chris Davis. I don't think he brings a ton. He's got a lot of raw power.
What are you talking about? He brings a ton of strikeouts.
He but he does bring a lot of strikeouts. He's an able defender at first, and you know, he has the ability to play third in a pinch, but really just a run-of-the-mill player, if you ask me.
Well, the thing with Davis is there really is no historical, you know, we don't really know how well Chris Davis is going to do over an entire season. The Rangers never allowed him given a chance. So this whole notion of, he's kind of this there, but we don't really know anything about him. Well, yeah, that's true, but we don't know anything about him because he's never had the chance. So I think the Orioles are going to give him a chance and say, prove us wrong. And if not, we're going to be looking for somebody to go over to first base.
Right. Well, we do know he tears up the minor leagues. So he's clearly either waiting around to develop his actual talent or he's a 4A player.
Right.
Second base.
Bobby Andino.
You're a friend of mine, Bobby Andino. I have to be honest, you know, in the wake of not having Brian Roberts, Andino has really performed admirably. He won the hearts of Baltimore in that final series against the Red Sox. And
take your shit home?
That's right. I have no qualms with Andino at second and manning the nine hole in the lineup. I think his defense, you know, was once considered a liability at second, but I don't think that's the case anymore.
I've got no issue with Andino. My biggest issue with Andino from last season was he couldn't bunt. As long as Showalter has been able to show him how to bunt like a 12-year-old little girl, I've got no issues with him. But if he can't bunt still, I'm going to be destroying him throughout this season.
Well, fair enough.
It's a bunt. It's the first thing you learn. Even you can bunt.
That's true. It's true, but you know, out of the nine hole, how many opportunities is he really going to need to bunt?
I don't know. You might have to progress Chris Davis. Never mind. He'll be on the bench. Never mind. That's right. I'll take that back.
Shortstop, J.J. Hardy.
He's not going to have as great of a season as last year, but should be a reliable, dependable shortstop. Probably one of the best shortstops we've had since, dare we say, Bordick.
Yeah, probably.
I know Tejada was here during that time, too, but Tejada was kind of hit and miss.
Certainly better than Ronnie Cedeno.
Yes.
The thing about Hardy was obviously last year was a contract year for him, but the real question
is... Well, it didn't need to be a contract year.
Well...
He got extended. And okay. The reason they extended him was because he was having such a banner year, you might as well get him now than later.
Hmm. The real question is, can J.J. Hardy stay healthy for a full, you know, whatever it be, 150 games or what have you? Because, you know, the injury bug is why he didn't have a contract, why he had to sign in Baltimore.
And he already got hit with the injury bug earlier this season. That's right. So it's definitely a possibility he could be out for 30, 40 games like he was last season.
I think it's clear, though, that if he is healthy and now that he's not, you know, kind of pegged in that leadoff role, that he can be... very effective in the lineup, and you know, he's just spotless defensively. He's very impressive to watch in the field.
Yeah, I was actually looking at some of his fielding numbers from last year, and he actually had some of the highest fielding numbers in terms of range and errors. You know, few errors. We're not talking high errors like Mark Reynolds, but few errors for all the shortstops in the major league. So
well, he was in Gold Glove contention.
He was definitely in Gold Glove contention, but I think, you know, two awards to the Orioles is enough. We don't want to raise too much awareness of the Orioles in the national spotlight.
That's true. Well, you mentioned the great third baseman that we have in Mark Reynolds, and I know that you are just a great fan of his defensive work.
Yeah, actually, when I came this spring training, I said to myself, I heard all the reports say, oh, he's more slender, he's more athletic, he's more agile, he's been working with Brady, and I thought to myself, this is going to be the year that Reynolds turns around. I bet you he's going to surprise a lot of people. I bet he is going to be our Orioles MVP this season. Yeah, I must have been drinking way too much this off-season. That was absolutely wrong. Anyone that has actually seen him play, oh my God. It's absolutely horrible.
The trouble is with him is that he will make the dumbest mistakes on the most routine balls, and then he will grace you he'll tease you with phenomenal plays every once in a while.
I was about to say, did you just use grace and Mark Reynolds in the same sentence?
It was poorly phrased.
All right, because I was about to turn off the microphone on you.
But it's so inconsistent, and it's mental lapses is really what it is.
Do you think it's mental lapses? Because I almost think it's athletic.
No, I think it's absolutely mental lapses.
He looks like Vladimir Guerrero out there with a glove right now.
Well, yeah. But he has those moments where, you know, the hot corner being a reactionary, he's got the reactions at times. And it's just the fact that he can't put it all together at all times. And that's really frustrating. I think his best position is obviously designated hitter. They moved him over to first last year for a while just to get him away from third. And, you know, he was better there, but only because I think it was a short sample size.
And it's first base.
Yeah.
And it's first base.
Yeah, yeah. He didn't have to move around as much, I guess.
That's right.
But I don't expect him to have as many errors this season just because it would be a tough feat to accomplish twice.
Well, he had, what, 32 errors last season?
He had a lot.
Yeah, I think he had 32 errors last season. We'll get to our prediction section later on. We'll come back for that one.
All right, we're all our reserve infielders. First Rule 5 draft pick is Ryan Flaherty.
Golf clap for him.
That's right. I was actually very pleased that he made the club. He can play all four positions.
Really makes a lot of sense why you would bring him aboard. I think that's really a great move for the Orioles to bring him on board. Looking at the infielder depth in our minor leagues and seeing who they brought up before, Josh Bell, Ryan Adams, I think it was a really great move to bring him up here and to see how he does and handles the major league level.
Well, middle infield was, again, you know, as a result of Brian Roberts not being healthy, was a position that Dan Niquette brought a lot of volume in, not necessarily talent. You had Tolleson, you had Antonelli, guys that were brought in to compete for those spots, but I thought that Flaherty was by far, in a way, the best option. So it's good to see that he's made the club.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see what they want to do with him. He eventually is going to have to play. Someone is going to get hurt. But he can be that super utility infielder like Andino has been for the past few seasons. And if he can grow into being any kind of player at all, that's what we need to have right now while other infielders are growing like Machado.
Sure. The last infielder we've got, actually that was a great pickup, which is Nick Johnson. Low risk.
The world's homeliest man.
The world's homeliest man with the world's homeliest mustache.
Yes.
You know, low risk to pick this guy up. He's defensively our best first baseman.
Minor league contract. I mean, it's, you're right. I mean, it was a great pickup. Just a question again of health.
That's right. If, you know, that reconstructed wrist can hold up. I think he's a man that knows what he's doing at the plate. He can fill a couple of different roles in the lineup. He's just a professional hitter, a major league hitter, which is not something that we've always had the luxury of having on the team,
right?
Much less in a reserve role. So,
no, I think he's a great bench addition. And again, if he plays 40 or 50 games this season from a bench side, it's got to be better than last year where Jake Fox was your backup first baseman.
Sure, absolutely. All right, moving to the outfield, we've got the usual suspects starting from right to left, Nick Markakis.
I don't think we need to talk about Nick Markakis besides solid. Let's hope for the power to come back, and let's see how his health does.
Sure. Adam Jones in center.
Yeah, Adam Jones should be fine. It's just a question in my head of, do the Orioles actually try to re-sign him, or do we just say, bye-bye, Mr. Jones? Let's go ahead and start rebuilding all over again. But we'll cover that in another segment on another date because I'll probably yell and scream.
Yeah, I mean, clearly his value will never be higher.
Again, we'll talk about it in a later segment. I don't want to yell and scream.
Left field, the starting left fielder, at least on most days, is Nolan Reimold.
For the month of April, that'll probably be the case. We'll have to see what happens with Mr. Chavez and Mr. Reimold doing dual duties, but Mr. Reimold deserves a chance to play in left field and get a shot at trying to make a chance to be a starting lineup person for this team. If he doesn't hit, though, he's not going to be a starting lineup. He's got terrible defense. Is it Luke Scott terrible? No. but there were several times that I noted during the weekend where he would get a ball and he would miss the cutoff man. And that's just inexcusable. That's little league stuff that you learn at a young age, and if you can't do that, you ain't going to make it in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, I think with him also, it's path to the ball. You know, yeah. The routes that he takes, yep, is questionable. He's an athletic guy, and you know, especially,
yeah, but
for
do we say
guy.
He's an athletic guy because we were looking at him in comparison to Felix P.A.? Or
no. He, for as tall and as a big guy as he's athletic, you know, there's hope that he could be at least a
power hitter. Yeah,
hope that he could be at least serviceable. But for the time being, you know, you're right. He's certainly nothing special out there. And you know, during his rookie season, when he was, you know, legitimately a rookie of the year candidate until he got hurt, he put on a clinic that said that he could hit, but we haven't seen it since.
Oh.
And he needs to get back to that. I think that.
But again, that comes back to a consistency side. Again, if you give him enough at bats,
right,
will it be there? It's the same question that we raised with Chris Davis. If you give him enough at bats, will it be there? And this whole season is about question mark, question mark, question mark. We started with the rotation, all bunch of question marks. We started with the infield with Chris Davis, big question mark. You've got Reimold out there, big question mark. It's going to be the same questions that we said, you know. Who's going to develop and who's not going to develop? This season, we're not going to the playoffs. It's going to be a hard time if we get to 500. What you're trying to figure out is, who are you trying to build the team around and who do we still need to go out there and get?
Sure. And does Reimold figure into that?
And does Reimold figure out to that? Or if not, do we need to start looking for an outfielder or do we need to start moving the prospects up a little bit quicker?
Yeah, Josh Bell has been seeing more starts in the outfield than ever before. You know, I think they're about ready to give up on him as a third baseman.
Can we just take him out of the woodshed and just pull out the shotgun?
Isn't that what we've done with most of our quote-unquote prospects at this point?
You're actually going to call them prospects?
Sure. The last outfielder is Andy Chavez, which, you know, at first when I saw that we picked him up, I had no idea what the logic was there, but on second thought, not a bad pickup.
You needed a fourth outfielder. It's as simple as that. You needed a fourth outfielder. I'm a little annoyed that, you know, basically has caused so much controversy with Reimold, but the only reason there is that controversy is because Reimold hasn't taken it up a notch. But you need a fourth outfielder. It's as simple as that.
And it's a good insurance policy in case Reimold isn't successful.
Or Markakis, if it gets hurt.
Exactly. You know, Chavez also has the ability to play center.
Right.
As any fourth outfielder that we're going to have will need to do. You know, he's a decent fielder. I've watched that clip of him reaching over the fence in New York when he was with the Mets to rob that home run. Obviously more solid than Reimold. And probably our best leadoff hitter candidate when he's in the lineup, just because nobody else is out there. And then if we want to talk about, you know, the next option, I think Jay Miller stuck around in spring training as late as you can, made a pretty decent impression on the club with his power, but strikeouts are an issue.
Yep.
So I think he would be the next guy up if there were an injury.
I would agree.
All right, so we've talked about the starters and the bench. Do we want to discuss the DL at all?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about Britton, that he's in the wings waiting. We'll see if he actually comes back. The only other big person off the top of my head is Brian Roberts, and you know, we're on concussion watch 2012 for Brian Roberts. We can have, you know, updates on a weekly basis, but predictions will be he's not coming back. It's all a facade. He's done. I mean, you can just look at him and look at his spring training photos. You can see that glassy-eyed look and the way they're gently working him back in, and it just strikes me as we don't want to let on that he's in this bad of shape, but he's in bad shape.
Yeah, I don't know if you read a couple months ago, there was an article in the Sun magazine that had talked about, you know, the struggles he had gone through since he had his injury, and it was life-altering stuff. I mean, he can't drive, he couldn't sleep for months and,
yep,
months and months. You know, light gives him a hard time. He couldn't come to FanFest because, you know, all 300 people in the room would have given him a hard time with the noise. I mean, forget baseball for a second. He needs to get back to being a person.
You're right. He needs to get back to being a normal person that has sex with his super hot wife.
That's right.
Okay? That's the most important thing, is to get back.
And if you want to victimize him on anything, that's
the right. He needs to get back and get back to, you know, having sex with his super hot wife. And if he's not doing that, then it's a great travesty.
I think the term we're looking for is back in the saddle.
Yes.
But yeah, Ryan Roberts, I would agree with you. Done. We may see him for a day or two this season, but I would doubt it.
You mean like throwing like a first pitch, or?
Here's my thing with Brian Roberts. This is what they need to do. He's obviously an incredibly popular guy in the club. He was the face of the organization until he got hurt. And I think what they need to do is they need to say, Brian, we love you. We love the service that you've given to the organization. We're going to move you into a different role, more of an ambassador's role. And if I were them, being the club, I would have moved Brian Roberts into the Masson side of things. Because when he first got hurt, he did plenty of spots on O's Extra pre- and post-game. And, you know, pretty boy, looks nice in a suit, the fans love him. It seems like a perfect fit to keep him in the organization, to give him something to do, to tie into the fans that obviously have been with him for the better part of a decade.
And that may be a possibility, but I'm thinking in my head, bright lights with concussion and brain-like issues, probably not a great idea.
Yeah, but he can handle that for an hour or two at a time versus
Kenny?
A stadium full of people and lights.
Yeah, we don't know if he can handle it for an hour or two.
That's true.
Bang his hot wife for 15 minutes is fine, but hour or two of working for Masson.
You're giving him a lot of credit there.
I'm telling you right now, if he goes and bangs Amber Theo Harris, all bets are off, okay?
All right. On that note,
we can't go back to Amber Theo Harris.
We can go back to Amber Theo Harris. You know,
on another segment, maybe.
Another segment.
Can I put some romantic music on at that point?
I hope so.
Okay, good.
All right. I think here for our final segment, we're going to throw out a couple of predictions for the Orioles.
All right. I promised it earlier because we were talking about Mark Reynolds. And the discussion was, you know, Mark Reynolds had, I think, 32 errors last season. I'm going to predict that Mark Reynolds has 45 errors this season.
Wow.
45 errors.
Wow.
I'm not sure if that's a major league record, but I'm guessing it's going to be pretty close to it.
It's a lot.
It is a lot. But I think he can do it. I think as long as the Camden Yards scorers are honest with themselves, I think 45 errors is there. After I heard, you know, Masson basically saying that slow, you know, rolling ball to Reynolds, you know, just didn't get off the ground and into his glove, and it was rolled a hit, I just shook my head and I was just like, well, that's absolutely ridiculous.
In their hearts, they know it's an error.
In their hearts, they know it's an error. But they're being screamed at of saying, this is great stuff, keep it up. But I'm going to say the 45 plus errors.
Okay. My first prediction is actually win-loss total. I think the Orioles are going to struggle to come anywhere near where they did last year, and I think that they're going to end up with 62 wins. And they will obviously hang that triple zero on the triple digit on the loss column.
All right. I'm going to go with prediction number two for Zach Britton. Zach Britton will not be pitching more than 50 innings this season.
If that.
Well, if that, yeah, but he's not going to pitch more than 50 innings.
All right. All right, my number two prediction is actually also in the pitching vein, and it has to do with Brian Mattis.
Okay.
And my prediction for Brian Mattis is that he will be bounced to the minors, where he will stay probably around midseason.
Okay. Not sure if I necessarily agree with that. I think Brian Mattis is going to keep it out. I think he's going to be perennially, you know, a lot more losses than wins, and he's probably going to be around a 6 or 7 ERA. But I'm going to make the prediction that at least one Oriole, I don't know which one it's going to be, but one Oriole is going to have more wins than they have losses.
A starter?
A starter.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right.
Which has not been the common occurrence in any season recently. So I think we're going to have one pitcher that's going to have more wins than he has losses.
You know, good luck with that.
Yeah, exactly. One can hope.
And my last prediction for the Orioles this season is that Mark Reynolds is going to be dealt. I don't think that he'll be dealt at the non-waiver trade deadline. I think
bag of oranges.
That's right. I think by August 1st, though, he will, or the end of August rather, he'll be gone. They are not going to pick up his contract for next year. He's got that ridiculous option for way too much money for the player that he is, and so they'll do their best to ship him off to somebody who might be able to use him on a playoff roster. For, you know, back of balls. And,
back of balls.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Alrighty. Well, we'll have to see what happens. And in the meantime, you know, we just saw the end of a Yankees-Orioles game for the second one where the Orioles went down in the extra innings. So, again, it looks like the Orioles season's possibly taking off again.
Hey, it's another feel-good evening
it
for
is.
Orioles baseball.
Something magic happens.
Every time you go.
Yes, exactly. Well, with that, I think we'll close out this podcast, and we'll stop back in about a week and talk about what has happened with the Orioles, how they've gone from their 3-0 start to their 3-2 start, and what happens for the rest of the week, and seeing, you know, how this takes off and how much closer we are to Ravens training camp opening up.
Ouch. All right. Well, thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you very much.